Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
A world gone insane. A world of madness. Can this be real?
Is that the feeling down in Los Angeles? That it's just in total denial and disbelief?
I don't know. I don't live in Los Angeles. I could imagine it's a bit shocking. It's very shocking. What's not shocking is that we are back.
Yes, we are back. West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. I am Samuel Paul.
I am Adam Nelson. And I am also in a whirlwind of emotion.
Yeah, well, don't look now, folks. But if you don't know what we're talking about, we are talking about a pennant race for the ages. This is a whole lot of fun. I will admit it's probably a little bit more fun since the Giants are in the driver's seat, it would seem. We have 7 games left to play and a 2-game separations by 2 of the best teams ever, it would seem. Yeah. Certainly the 2 best teams ever involved in a pennant race at the same time.
In the same division,
yes. That's what's amazing. One of these teams is going to win 106 games and not win the division. How is that even remotely possible?
Not necessarily. There's no guarantee the Giants are going to win 106.
There's no guarantee for anything in life, and it takes more than just a talent to win the pennant. And it truly is unbelievable. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm gonna enjoy it down to the last game. And are we going to have a game 163?
Well, it appeared so, although the way that the Dodgers have been playing the West, it almost seems like they're playing 500 ball against the West. And unfortunately, we got another game tonight with Arizona. When Kershaw can't beat Arizona, I start to get a little worried.
Well, you know, there's one thing that I noticed a truth about sports. If you have a team, much like the Dodgers of the last, decade.
Right.
You develop a certain a type of animosity with other teams. They don't like to continuously lose to the same damn team all the damn time. And I think that when you are successful as any aspect of life and other details, I'm sure you develop a target on your back. People want to beat you.
Sure.
And when these games, the teams that are out of it, the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, the Padres of the world, they don't want to make it easy for you. They want to play the spoiler because that's the only joy they have left in this season, is to beat the Dodgers.
Because that is what it's going to come down to. The Padres, you're saying, would rather play spoilers against the Dodgers, and they would rather see the Giants win. I mean, they're in the same division.
I think they would love to be able to play spoiler for both teams, but that's not going to happen. There's nothing that's going to spoil the Giants or Dodgers season except each other and possibly the Cardinals. But we'll get to them in a little bit.
Yeah, because, you know, like, especially in the West, it's losing the division 8 years straight by, I mean, every other team other than the Dodgers, is more of an indictment on the teams themselves and not their record necessarily against the Dodgers, because as we've always seen, the Giants and the Dodgers play each other very well. Their records are pretty even over the last 120 years.
Right.
So it's mainly just the other teams not being able to beat other teams, because it seems like the Dodgers against the West, it's always tough.
Yeah.
Not unlike, was it 2018 when the Dodgers played 163 against the Rockies? But I guess I could see what you're saying. There's probably a little bit more animosity between SD and LA than SD and SF. So I guess if they could have it their way, they would have won the West.
Well, sure. I mean, the poor hapless San Diego Padres who were just last night, I guess it was the 25th of September, were eliminated officially from postseason contention with their loss against a wild one with Atlanta, and the Cardinals winning their 15th in a row.
Man.
They have watched over the last 10 years, you know, one team, the Dodgers, win the West 9 years in a row. And during that same span, have another team, the Giants, win two more World Series. And they can't seem to do a thing about it. They try to develop their own players, and they get some great ones, and then they trade a lot away to try to buy a title, like in much of the way that the Dodgers have done, and they fell flat. What happened in San Diego is, have we seen the last of the Jace Tingler experiment in San Diego?
Yeah, I think Tingler's out, because Tingler wasn't. He wasn't allowed to have any of his guys surrounding him. You know, AJ Preller completely hired all of the managers and all of the staff. And usually when you're a manager, you know, the coach, you get to pick your coaches. You get to at least pick a bench coach, a pitching coach. Tingler did not get any of his guys. So when it comes to down to it, he's not going to have anybody on his side to cheer for him. You know, so he's out as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But the weird thing is that they have more talent than the Giants, at least on paper. I mean, that lineup and that roster is stacked.
It is. I mean, that's why the narrative that was constructed by Major League Baseball and in that other four-letter network, they constructed this narrative that this was going to be a race of the ages between two National League West rivals. At least they got that part right.
But power bats, power pitching. They have it on paper.
Well, they absolutely do. They have arguably two of the best players in the world right now. And
two of the best players in the world. Who?
Well, there's Tatis Jr.
Sure.
And one can argue for Machado is certainly in the top 50.
Wrong. Top 50. All right.
It's still a very elite group. He's still a very good player. He certainly plays the Giants really tough. But you know, and he owes a certain Dodgers fan quite a bit of money still.
That's right. Let's just
pitch my contact.
What?
We'll win a World Series before you guys do.
I'll bet you my contract. We're just going to play that every once in a while.
Yeah, every time that we get an opportunity to mention that, we're going to mention that.
But it's not even just that. It's, you know, Yu Darvish, you know, Blake Snell. You know.
This team was built to, if not win the West, at least come very close to and at least give Dodgers a run for their money.
And the way the season started, it looked like that was probably going to be the narrative.
For the first 2 months of the season, It looked like that was going to be the case, and then we had another team sort of crash the party and dominate for the entire summer.
Is this a Giants record season? I mean, I'm sure they're breaking some records. This is a
Giants season for the ages. There have been records broken that haven't been sniffed by the franchise since World War One. They have all time hit the most home runs in franchise history, 236 as of last night. And
no guy, no one guy hitting 30.
And no one guy hitting crazy. 30. But it's possible the way that one guy is certainly hitting the ball right now, he's three home runs away from becoming the first 30-plus home run hitter since when Barry Lamar Bonds. And
they haven't had one guy hit 30 in the last 20 years? They have not
had one guy hit 30 or more home runs in the last almost 20 years. Yes.
That's ridiculous.
So it's partly is due to the home ballpark, which seems to have changed a little bit the last couple of seasons.
Smaller park, it's playing a little bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, it's not not significantly smaller, but
it seems to be making a significant difference.
I think the more significant change has been the way that the wind circulates through the stadium.
How would that change from like 1 year to the next?
Well, they've closed off the arches in right field. Those brick archways that were built to let fans, you know, be able to watch the game
for free viewing area. Yeah.
Those have been walled off. You can still kind of see the field from back there, but now you need to pay to get underneath there. But the wind off the bay is no longer drifting onto the field. What that was doing was creating this this current in towards the plate. Very rarely was it a strong wind, but sometimes it was. But it was always there, and it always knocked fly balls down. You had to hit it really high, like, and far, like Barry Bonds used to all the time, made that park look as small as it is. It's the right down the line, it's only 309 to the base of that 24-foot high brick wall. And now that there's no longer that stream of air coming in off the bay, fly balls out to right field are carrying a little bit more than they used to, and I think that's the most significant a change. There's been several home runs that have just cleared the arcade or just landed in the arcade that weren't landing there before. They were, you know, easy flyouts because they would just hang up in this drift of cold air. And
now, what I hear is this is a long-winded explanation for the rampant juicing and steroids intake by the Giants. Is this correct? Is this can that be asserted as truth?
No, I don't believe so. If there is an increase in testosterone, I wouldn't be surprised if it's naturally gained. Have you seen what Gabe Kapler looks like? He gets out there, and
this guy's juiced up, and he looks like Bane.
He's a bodybuilder, and he believes, you know, muscle mass does increase testosterone. You know what I like.
Yeah.
So no,
Lamont
I don't.
Lamont Wade Jr., Wilmer Flores, Brandon Crawford? I mean, what is happening over there?
It's a combination of
what's in the water.
It's not in the water. I think these guys are working out differently. These guys are approaching their at bats, and many of them have made tweaks to their swings.
Yeah, their tweaks to their bloodstream as well. No.
There is absolutely no evidence of that. I, you know, Barry Bonds is long gone, and it, you know, his the only real mention of Bonds are just his ultimate records, and that's about it. You know,
is it the shoes?
It's got to be the shoes. No, the coaching staff has done a phenomenal job. These guys are healthier than they have been in a long time.
Well, they do have the most coaches in baseball. So
they do. They working. Whatever they're doing, it is absolutely working. And it's been fun. That's all I can say. It's been fun.
Well, when you're one and done in the playoffs, we'll see. Now, you know, we keep talking about 163, but in the East, in the American League,
oh yeah,
we could see a 164 if things keep going the way that they're going. We have the Red Sox, Yankees, Toronto, and now even Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle is still in the mix.
Back. Yeah, if those other teams play 500 ball here on out. They can't get it all done in 163. They're going to have to play 164.
It's quite possible,
the chagrin of every beat writer, I'm sure, out there in America.
Yeah, and I think the more, because the wild card games are already scheduled, they've boxed themselves into a corner and being able to have these tiebreakers fall in. It's a very complex breakdown of how those playoff games, the extra regular season games, shake down.
Yeah,
who hosts who, and
because, well, exactly, the team's traveling secretary as well. That's they could really be earning their money with that. Right now, as is slated, the AL wildcard game is set for Tuesday, October 5th. The NL wildcard game the day after. It's going to be cutting it close. It's going to be pushing it, because then the DS begins on October 8th. So, right. You know, they don't have much time. They don't have much wiggle room there. But it would be pretty fun to see. Again, it would suck for the teams, but it'd be pretty interesting. I I've said this a million times. I don't like the wildcard game at all. I think it's absurd. I think especially now when you have a team like the Dodgers or the Giants that are going to win clearly over 100 games and are going to be, I don't know, 15 games up, right, from the next team, at least, maybe even more, 13 games, whatever. It just seems silly that they should have to play one game, either of those teams. Maybe you have a caveat. I don't know if we talked about this last time. I feel like we did, but a one-game wild card, unless the other team has 10-plus games ahead, or unless one of the other teams gets 100 wins. If you get 100 wins or you're 10-plus games ahead of the next quote-unquote wild card team by the end of the season, you should get a guaranteed exemption, because it's just ridiculous.
And one aspect I absolutely agree with you, but why wouldn't we just go ahead and do like a reseeding of the playoffs based on record and give the wild card game, you know, to the division winner who with the worst record, if it is a
what do you mean?
If the non-division winner that qualifies for the playoff, the wild card team, has a better record than a division winner, they would be seated higher. And say in our current situation, say Giants win the West, Dodgers get the wild card, the Dodgers and Giants will both host a DS series, while the division winner,
Atlanta, is going to be like
with 82 wins, a 500 division winner plays the wild card game against the wild card winner, which, you know,
that would be that's a huge wrinkle. That would be
or what
I
about,
don't hate it though. I don't hate it.
What about, because that's ultimately I know that the NBA talked about a system like that because of the disparity between the two divisions.
Yeah,
as well.
I don't want a 16 team playoffs ever.
Well,
I don't
I'm not talking about the number, but I'm talking about the reseeding so that
the
better teams play, you get better matchups, and the possibility of the two best teams actually ending up in the NBA championship.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing I think we can all agree on is that we do not want an NBA type postseason where nobody watches the first round because it's extremely boring.
Because it's the almost the also rans against the always have beens. But what if they changed the wild card game into a series? What if they did a two-game wild card playoff where the team with the lesser record has to win two?
Yeah, and this is what we were talking about last year when they were doing the weird, you know, 2020 postseason, the longest postseason in baseball history,
following the shortest season.
Right. so you know, arguably the hardest World Series to ever win. I think that's true. Or we just eliminate the stupid wild cards series, quote unquote, altogether. But we'll see at the end of this year for the new CBA. You know, when 2022 starts, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of things that I do not like a universal DH. But as long as they don't monkey around too much with the postseason rules, I guess I'll take it. You know, I just don't want an NBA type scenario.
Yeah, no, an NBA type scenario wouldn't be ideal for sure, but I wouldn't mind. I enjoy the wild card. I enjoy the intrigue and the way that it keeps teams and fans engaged much longer into the season.
Well, sure, Giants were the beneficiaries of that first wild card series in 2014, and then ended up winning it all, right? So.
I
can see why you're a fan of it.
Yeah, and the wild card in general was implemented in '94 with the league expansion and the reorganization of the divisions after the Giants won 103 games and did not win the division.
Right.
I like the wild card in general. I think that it needs to be reimagined a little bit to make it a little bit more equitable for the teams involved in that particular game, especially if one team has a record of, you know, that is 15-20 games better than the team that they're playing in a one game winner take all scenario. I mean, even it used to be that game 163 wasn't just 163, it was actually a three game series. In 1962, the last time that anything like this happened, certainly in the National League West, with the two most important teams in the National League West, the Giants and Dodgers played 162, 163, and 165. The Giants ended up winning that series and going on to losing to the World Series in seven games to the New York Yankees. That was... you know, that wasn't just a one game winner take all game. And that was even after 162 games of regular season baseball. And, you know, that's what they needed to do to make it equitable for both of these great teams.
Now, in the same note, if you were the Rays right now, would you be better off, let's say, finishing with the second best record in the league? Maybe start throwing some games so that you could maybe play the White Sox in the division series rather than playing one of the other AL East teams that'll most surely make the wild card, Toronto, Yankees, you know, Red Sox. You know, the Yankees are 7-9 against the Rays this season. The Red Sox and Blue Jays are 8-11. So, you know, the Rays have handled them.
The Rays, I don't think the Rays care. I think they're far enough ahead and they're a good enough team that they don't care who they face or gonna feel like they're.
But here's
them.
The only wrinkle though. So they're 500 against the White Sox, but against the Mariners, who are the dark horse, they're 1-6 this year against the Mariners.
You know, if the Mariners pull off this, I will be so happy and will be definitely rooting for a Seattle San Francisco World Series. That could be a whole lot of fun. But, if I were the Rays, I wouldn't be worried about the Mariners and facing the Mariners. I think it would be an absolute miracle at this point if they were able to, you know, get those three games on the teams that are in front of them, leapfrog them all, and get into that wild card spot. I think that would be absolutely fabulous. I'd love to see it, but if I were the Rays, I wouldn't be even thinking about that.
Oh, I bet they're thinking about it. But, yeah, it's probably not bloody likely. Now, the 2021 Giants became the eighth team in the franchise's 138-year history to reach 100 wins, and only the fourth in the San Francisco era. Name those other three teams. Let's see if you can name one.
The other three?
San Francisco Giants. To win 100 games.
100 wins. Well, I think I already named, I think, two of them. The 93 Giants.
93, yeah.
And the 1962 Giants.
Okay, wow.
And then the other 100 game Giants was 1972 or 3.
2003. Yeah. 62, 93, 03. And now 21. What year is it? 21.
Forgot about 03. That was a very disappointing season, arguably more disappointing than 02.
The pennant hangover. What could be more disappointing than getting beat by a rally monkey? I mean, come on. Just the name Scott Spezio just keeps you up at night, I'm sure.
Troy Gloss. I think it was David Eckstein.
Oh, Eck. I was an Angel fan for like, you know, one October. That was pretty
cool.
Yeah,
I noticed a drastic uptick in Angels fans all over the place, even in Arizona. Oh, my God.
That was pretty good. I do like that a lot. Now, I'm shocked. I never thought this would happen, but I do believe in a previous episode, maybe a year, maybe 2 years ago, in one of our seventh inning stretches, you had a ridiculous stretch about, well, I think it was even years, but obviously this is not an even year. I forget what it was. Taylor Swift or something.
It was the numerology.
It was the numerology of
the quote unquote even year. It didn't have anything to do with the evenness of the year.
We choose truth over facts.
Okay.
it had to do with the way that the digits in the years added up to a prime number.
Okay. You have to give me a refresher course.
Okay, so 2010 had a young Buster Posey bursting into the league. The digits added up in 2010. 2 + 1 = 3. 3 is a prime number. The Giants win the World Series. 2012, after a year injured with an ankle injury, Buster Posey is back in the lineup hitting well. And the digits in 2012, 2 plus 1 plus 2 equals 5. 5 is a prime number. The Giants win the World Series. 2014, Buster Posey also having an amazing year at the plate. And 2 plus 1 plus 4 is 7. 7 is a prime number. The Giants win the World Series. So skip ahead to this year, 2021. Again, we have a situation. 2 plus 2 plus 1 is 5. 5 being a prime number. Giants win the World Series.
Dramatization may not have happened.
So
that settles it, I guess.
I think that's the state of affairs here. So what that means is whether the Dodgers or the Giants win the World Series this year, I will be right, because I did pick the Dodgers to win the World Series in our opening day.
That is true.
Show this year, just based purely on what I was looking at on paper before these teams started to play.
You and everybody else.
Oh, man.
I don't know how. Well, again, you know, either they're juicing or.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
You know, they got some good stuff going over there. All right, let's switch gears a little bit to Cedric Mullins. Man, wow. How about Cedric Mullins? Picked him up off waivers. Just killing it. This guy, last Friday, he became the first Oriole to hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases in the same season. The first 30-30 in Orioles history.
Well, it's nice that the Orioles have a little bit of good news this year.
Yeah. He's the 43rd player to do it in MLB history, and first since Yelly and Acuna in 2019. Perhaps the only sad part about this is that he did it in his home park in front of 7,900 fans.
Well, yeah, when you lose...
That's brutal.
When you haven't won 50 games the entire season, who wants to go to the game? It's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, that's...
Same thing is happening in Oakland, it would seem, and they have a much better record than the Orioles.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And they always seem to. I mean, I bet the A's are getting more than 7,000 fans, though. I mean,
not by much. Not by much. The Coliseum has been very empty as of late.
That's sad.
It is.
Makes me sad. Should we do a little MVP talk?
MVP. Yeah, we have the in many respects, the MVP situation has changed since the last time that we talked. Is it not?
Well, I mean, I think so. You know, 1987 was the last time that the two most valuable players both played for teams that did not make the playoffs. And I'm curious to see, and those guys were Andre Dawson and George Bell. I'm curious to see if perhaps this year we see the same thing.
It's certainly possible. Are you thinking of Shohei Ohtani in the American League and Bryce Harper in the National League?
No, I mean, everybody's talking Bryce Harper. Between all three guys, I guess, in the National League, Tatis, Harper, and Soto. Soto, who's just quietly killing it and being the National League Mike Trout. Just nobody's talking about because he's on a bad team.
Right.
But all those guys are on teams that are probably, we know are not going to make the postseason. And it does appear that AL is wrapped up. But that also brings up another issue. If Vlad Jr. Gets the Triple Crown, does that automatically make him an MVP? And or is this just a case of really bad luck for a player that has to play and actually attain a Triple Crown whilst competing against somebody like Shohei Ohtani, who we've never seen before?
All due respect to Ohtani and the phenomenal, unique, amazing year that he has had. If if young Vlad Jr. does get the Triple Crown. That happens so rarely. How do you not give him the MVP?
Well, because he only plays half the game, and Otani plays on both sides.
This is, you know, he's two guys.
Otani is two guys.
I know he's two guys.
It seems like a cheat code. It doesn't seem fair.
You know, I mean, and he's done so well, but he's also, you know, he's the best player on a team where the other best player has been on the DL all year, much to my fantasy chagrin.
Oh yeah.
They have otherwise no pitching. He's the best hitter and the best pitcher on a hapless team.
Well, and don't forget Rendon, obviously, too much to the chagrin of many, many of the listeners out there right now. But that's still a stacked team. I mean, you know, Upton, and I guess before that,
they're all underperforming, you know, except for him.
But does that negate any of his relevance in automatically winning the MVP?
But this is what I'm saying. I think that he is the MVP unless Vlad Jr. gets that triple crown, because that triple crown did more for that team than everything that Otani has done for his team. Now, Otani, without a doubt, is the MVP of the Angels. You know, and Vlad Jr. is more than likely the MVP of the Blue Jays.
Yes.
So it comes down to who is the most valuable player in the league. Well, I mean, where does it stand in some of those other stats? I mean, we all know the Triple Crown stands, but, you know, where does it stand in terms of WAR between these two players?
Otani, for WAR, wins above replacement for all, including pitchers, Otani is leading by over an entire point. He's at 8.5 right now, and Marcus Semien's at 7.3. 8.5. I mean, it's just he's in a league of his own. And in terms of wins above replacement for all, Guerrero isn't even. Oh, he's fifth. And then just in terms of position players, Guerrero's third. I think for me, you know, look, I still got to give it to Otani because he's two men. He's two guys in one. He's just his unprecedented performance on the mound. I mean, 3.2 ERA, 123 in the third innings, 123 in the third innings. You know, a lot of guys that are full-time pitchers don't even get that anymore, which is a whole other story. But in the batter's box, 45 home runs, 953 OPS, and on the bases, and this is something that Guerrero can't do, he's got 24 stolen bases, Otani. You know, last Sunday, Otani came into the game with 45 home runs and then also pitched a 10-strikeout game. As you can imagine, there's, you know, the only other guy that's ever even in that proverbial scoreboard is Babe Ruth, who in 1921 had a 2-strikeout game while hitting over 50 home runs. And then in 1930 had a 3-strikeout game when he got 49 jacks. Right. So, I mean, 10, I mean, it's not even close. He's outsplashing the Babe. So, I mean, all due respect to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but, I mean, this might be just one of those scenarios of just, call it bad luck. You just happen to be in the same league
now,
as a guy that's doing literally unprecedented things.
I know we're West Coast biased for a particular reason, and that's because we see way too much East Coast bias. Is it possible that we will see that because so many baseball writers based on the East Coast will not have seen Otani perform these Ruthian feats?
I think he transcends media markets at this point. I think Otani he is a must-see TV. So I think even if you are on the East Coast, you are watching those starts, especially if you're a baseball writer, and especially if you're part of the Baseball Writers of America. Now, if the Blue Jays somehow make the playoffs, you know, I know they're supposed to submit their things before, you know, at the end of the regular season, but
right.
that always does skew a lot of voters. And, it and just does, getting, even though it's not supposed
yeah.
to.
It does, but getting to the playoffs is certainly a regular season feat. I mean, winning the pennant, achieving the wild card happens in the regular season.
Individual stats, though.
Individual stats. I mean, it's the argument who has done more for their team to get into a successful position. You know, it's defined valuable.
Well, yeah, exactly. And when you're talking about wins above replacement, even though Ohtani's on a bad team, that's still almost 9 wins. I mean, that's just crazy. You know, all right. Well, how about National League? So you're giving it to Harper. You just
well, no, I'm just wondering if that's where you tie. I mean, I think that Harper is having a great season, and
he's definitely having a great. He's having the best season he's had since his MVP campaign,
which is you know, on one level is really good to see. I think, you know, maybe Chris Bryant gives an assist to that. You hear the story, Chris Bryant gave Harper one of his bats.
They both grew up in Vegas together, right? Yeah,
they both grew up in Vegas. They got together, Harper was gifted by Bryant one of his bats, and after that started using that bat, started to really hit the cover off the ball in a, you know, a whole new way. But you know, Tatis has had a great, outstanding season. He's hit so many. He's had 40-plus home run season for Tatis, and he was even injured.
That's true. Yeah.
During the year, he hasn't even played a full season. So it's a very good question. You know, who's going to win this award? And I think this one will come down to East Coast bias and the fact that the Padres sort of petered out despite this fantastic performance by Tatis. I think that as deserving as Tatis may be in this case, Harper will probably end up with it.
You know, it's funny because Tatis, although he's leading the NL in home runs, you know, it's kind of about it. I mean, I'm not saying it's about it, but it's like he doesn't even play shortstop anymore. Now, that's not really his fault. His coaches made him.
Right.
But I mean, the guy's made of glass. I'm not even going Tatis or Harper. I'm going Soto or Harper. Juan Soto's 473 OBP. 473 OBP leads the majors by 40 points. Yeah. And that's Bryce Harper in second. 40 points. He's also leading the NL in batting average at 324. And his 410 batting average with runners in scoring position is number one and leads by 21 points. 410 with runners in scoring position. Since the All-Star break, Soto has a 1258 OPS. It's just crazy, you know. He does have the highest WAR for any position player right now, 7.4. Leads the NL also in OPS plus with 183. You know, he came into this weekend with a 500 OBP for his last 90 games. You know, the only person to do that in 5 different seasons, Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
You know.
No, there's no doubt that Juan Soto is an
he's
elite
22.
Player.
He's 22 he came years
into
old.
This, he came into this league and was on top instantly.
Instantly. And instantly. We were talking about it years ago, and when you talk about guys like that, usually they fall off. Usually they're like, you're like, oh,
yeah, and this,
the league will adjust. The league is not adjusting.
Well, so. maybe they did, and he's already readjusted.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
This is a characteristic of those great players, and Juan Soto's a great player, and it looks like he's getting the Mike Trout treatment.
The only other player 22 or younger with a 500-plus OBP for 90-plus games, Ted Williams, 1941. The only other player.
Yeah.
He's also reached base four times in 25 games this season. Okay, the only other players to do that more are the Babe, Gehrig, Williams, Teddy Williams, and Bonds.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is truly elite. Yeah, no, all of those names that you mentioned are.
So you know, it's tough because when you look at the leaderboards and when you're looking at, it's Soto. It's Harper. It's Soto. It's Harper. Soto. Harper. It keeps going back and forth.
Yeah.
But in terms of
Could you imagine if they were still on the same team together?
Well, yeah. They'd probably
both be better for it.
Well, they won a World Series without Harper, so, you know, maybe not. But they also had Scherzer and relatively healthy.
And they haven't done anything since.
Well, yeah, they didn't had a fire sale. But,
yeah,
you know, 7.4 war. Tatis is sitting at 6.7. And then Goldie, of all people, who has just been playing like vintage Goldschmidt the last month and a half or so, is sitting at 6 even right now. Sick, man. Everybody that got Goldschmidt like in round 3 or 4, maybe even 5 of their draft,
oh, yeah, they got a
with
steal.
A 6 war. Wow. Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. No,
and Harper sitting at 5.7. So, you know, sitting at 6th place overall. Now, again, it's just what stats do you like? You know, for me, I like batting average, you know.
Yeah, well,
I'm
that's the standard.
Just,
yeah.
You know, batting average is key. You know, and it's not that Harper's still batting 300. So, you know, you got to give him that. But, you know, I don't know, OBP. Because it's just like the stats that Soto are leading, he's leading by like an insurmountable amount. Like, it's you know, like the ones that Harper are leading, they're very, very close. Like, literally within like 1 point. Or 2 points, you know, here and there. So, I don't know. I like Soto. I just like that he's young and he hasn't let off at all. And he had a bit of a slow start, but he's sitting at 29 home runs right now. I'm sure he'll get 30 before the end of the season. I don't know. I just, I know I have a bit of a maybe a bias against Bryce Harper, although I don't like hate the guy, you know. I don't know. Is he the MVP? I don't know.
That's a clown question, bro.
All right. Well, sorry, Bryce, but I got to go your old teammate, Soto. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, it's compelling. I wish I had a vote. Put my own 2 cents in. I wish you had a vote because you...
oh, I have a vote. now, speaking of former Bryce Harper teammates, Max Scherzer is now 0-61 in his plate appearance.
0-61.
He's now reached base 0 times in 61 plate appearances.
And mad because
it's a record.
Kershaw is getting little bloop singles. Or
oh, yeah. He's getting pissed. Yeah, Scherzer's getting bad. He's like, he got a hit off of that? You see that? Yeah, that was hilarious.
Batting practice, bro. There's a reason.
Luckily, he's pitching out of his shoes, although maybe not in Colorado, but I think he'll be fine.
It's tough for anyone to pitch in Colorado. This has been proven over the past 25 years or so.
Yeah, that's true. You know what's weird though about the home run leaders is that, you know, none of these guys, I'm talking, you know, Vlad Jr., Sal Perez, who's just having a career year.
Oh, Johnny Bench.
Better than Johnny Bench.
Yeah.
And Ohtani. This is the first time in MLB history that 3 players who had never previously hit 30 home runs in a season, all have 45 plus in the same year.
Well, maybe there is a new designer drug in the water.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Vladdy's previous career high was 15. He's already at 46. Sal Perez Jr.'s previous high, 27. He's at 46. And Ohtani, you know, 22. Before now, he has 45. And among the first 5 players to reach the 40 home run mark, all 5 were born in different countries. And MLB first. How about that? Ohtani, obviously, yeah. Japan. Yeah. Sal Perez, Venezuela. Marcus Semien, USA. Fernando Tatis Jr., the Dominican. And even though Vladdy Jr. is Dominican, he was technically born in Montreal during his dad's playing days. So, Canada. Yeah, there you go, Canada.
I heard an interesting story. And you're mentioning Sal Perez from Venezuela there just the other day, that last year, the 2020 truncated season when the pandemic really shut everything down and the training camps were all shut down and everything, and everybody went into quarantine, there was a rather large community of baseball players from Venezuela who were stuck in Arizona and Florida with no way to get back to Venezuela. And some of them did have some fantasies, family.
Ooh.
in the States, and many of them roomed together, stayed together, and ended up forming their own little league and playing together during the off time before the 2020 truncated season began. And a number of Venezuelan players are showing benefit of that extra play time, a mixture of rookies, young players who not quite there, and older established players performing much better than they have in the past, and maybe due to the camaraderie, the extra practice, the extra play that they got during this time. Just the thought.
Interesting. So Sal Perez, man, I mean, that kind of came out of nowhere. I know he was... People were pretty high on him, but
yeah, that was a
good... He was getting drafted really early in leagues, and I was essentially like laughing at people, and now I'm getting laughed at.
You're laughing at me for taking him so early in that draft.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%.
I had seen a few projections regarding him, saying that he is, you know, probably would be the best catcher to carry on a fantasy team.
Well, he's also playing every day, which is a huge boom.
Yeah, there's been very few, so much so that my last draft pickup, which I also got laughed at for, Buster Posey.
Well, you know,
I've been able to put him in and out as necessary, and not necessarily have to put him in that catcher spot, has been really great.
Yeah, turns out you didn't even need a backup catcher because Sal Perez has somehow found the fountain of youth.
Iron Man. Amazing. So it's good, but yeah.
Speaking of Buster Posey, that brings us to this week's Ignoble Award of the Week.
Speaking of Buster Posey, what does that mean?
Well, this week's Ignoble Award is brought to you by Carlton's Lutefisk. Tired of under-gelatinized, overly hydrated salted cod? Miss the days of your grandmother's lye-pickled stockfish? Well, fret no more. Carlton's Lutefisk has been providing the greater New England area with your favorite rehydrated fish products for over 73 years, offering a benchmark of quality for this malodorous jellied fish. Each delicate piece of fish is squatted on for 3 to 4 hours by our licensed backstops and never reaches your table until passed by a 72-point inspection for quality and springiness. Never again will you wonder if the putrid smell emanating from the tin is from foreign lye or domestic, as we always use traditional leaching methods with real Massachusetts wood ash to produce the only the highest quality caustic sodium hydroxide. Don't be fooled by other competitors who only claim their lye is highly caustic. Carlton's Lutefisk is the only Lutefisk on the market, manufactured by using our patented membrane cell chloralkali process. Whether you wear white socks or red socks, blue socks or no socks, Carlton's Lutefisk is a must for traditional family meals, and our prices are always fair and never foul. Find us at your local Price Right or Market Basket, or visit us online at carltonslutefisk.com to have your own delivered today.
That's fantastic. A new sponsor? Did they send us a sample?
I swore we would never do it. I swore we would never do it, but, you know, Daddy needs the money, so, you know. What do you got for me this week?
Well, I don't know if you'd like that the ultimate winner, but I do have, and there were several contenders. I think this week we had pitchers deliberately throwing at batters.
Yeah,
we had secret game plans being stolen off of the field of play.
Oh yeah, Cardgate. I like that. I got a lot more respect for Kiermaier. I'm not gonna lie. I would have done the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
That's not the winner. That's
no,
not
that
the
was those not were not the winners. They came close though. But no, thinking about it, I'm gonna have to this week give it to one former MVP. Cody Bellinger. What is wrong with Cody Bellinger? He has not been performing up to what we would expect Cody Bellinger
He popped his shoulder out last postseason.
Right.
And then, you know, he was kind of a little gimpy after that. And then apparently he's been playing with a broken rib, or at least a stress fracture in his ribs for the entirety of this season.
It's hard to do anything with a even slightly fractured rib. It's hard to breathe, let alone swing a baseball bat, but why hasn't he taken the time off to rest and heal? Yeah. I mean, we looked this up. We were talking about this just before we hit the on button here, but he has a negative 1.7 WAR this year.
He does. Oh, I'm looking at it. He's got a negative 1.7 WAR.
So,
Cody, based
on our discussion on WAR earlier this year, we discussed the relevance and what that means. That means that he has cost the Dodgers nearly two games just because he's been in the lineup this year.
And we're two games back.
And right you're now. Two games back. Mm. That would mean if he had taken the time off to heal.
It hurts.
At minimum, at worst, the Dodgers and Giants are tied as we speak right now.
Cody.
So that is why Cody Bellinger gets the ignoble award of the week.
It's a hard pill to swallow. He's slated to be coming back at least maybe right before, maybe a bit like next weekend before the end of the season. He's got a fresh new do. He's got a haircut, and he says he's feeling great. You know, he was saying he was feeling the most pain when he's throwing.
I could believe it. Between the shoulder and the thing.
And the ribs.
I will say I sympathize. I've cracked ribs before. Currently, my shoulder has been hurting the last 2 weeks. Not that I play baseball, but I do have a job that is fairly physical. And just walking around with injured shoulder or rib is very difficult. It is very painful. I get it, and on a personal level, I'm glad that he's feeling better, and I hope that he comes back to be like the player that he was just a couple years ago. On another level, it couldn't happen to a better team. So,
luckily the Dodgers are stacked, and luckily we got AJ Pollock back, who made an immediate impact against Arizona. It's still not good, though. You know, I mean, I always think of Cody Bellinger as a first baseman still, because that's just what he played for the first few seasons. But he's a Gold Glove center fielder, and we need him out there. You know, because we can't put Muncy out in center field. And second base has already got traffic with Trey Turner now. So we kind of need him to play center. It's kind of like outfield or bust. And he says he's feeling almost 100%, if not 100%. And that was like a direct quote. So I hope that can translate back into his swing. And I hope he can figure it out right on time for the postseason. Because we all know that he's worth, 7, 8, 9 WAR when he's healthy. I mean, the guy's an MVP, so hopefully he can right the ship just in time for the postseason. And then all will be forgiven.
Yeah, well, as about a month ago, related to that, the Dodgers and Yankees had more payroll on their injured reserves than the Marlins, Pirates, Orioles, and Indians have on their entire major league roster.
Wow.
So there's a lot of money invested in these two teams, and I don't know, they're not going to win the division in either case. At least it's looking like it.
The Dodgers?
At this point.
You know, the Dodgers are giving all their money to Trevor Bauer, all right, and this guy's not even playing.
And whose fault is that at this point?
I'm not going to go there.
Have you have an updated in this whole strange situation with Bauer? What's going on there? I haven't heard anything about it for a little while.
I don't know. It's not going to be good. No matter what, it's not going to be good. It's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow. Luckily, it's a short deal, but he's also the highest paid player in baseball this year. So
it is.
And that's at least 4 or 5 WAR right there. So that right there is, you know, Dodgers in first place.
There's also, what about what's happening with the Dodgers in extra innings?
Yeah,
the
Dodgers, not many the Dodgers, good things.
What is their record now? Like 3-14 for an extra inning?
No, I think it's like 5. It's not good.
It's not good. You go 500 in those. You're in first place by several games.
There's
a lot going on. It's baseball is a strange game, you know. I said at the top of the episode, it takes more than just talent to win in baseball. There's
steroids.
I was going to say magic. There's got to be some luck that is involved. Now the Dodgers this year have been good enough to overcome a lot of that lack of luck that they've been having this year.
Well, we've also had the second most injuries in all of baseball. Well, everybody's got injuries.
But bad luck is luck. It's just, you know, it's two sides to every coin. It's a good side and a bad side. But it's still luck. And the luck that the Dodgers are having or not having, depending on how you look at it, can be overcome by the sheer talent that they have. I mean, they just can win games because they're that good.
That's the key. It's the depth.
But it's the intangibles, the unmeasurables in baseball that sometimes make a difference, and that's one of the I think my favorite parts about the game is just that there's so much that can happen that is just so weird and so unusual, like that play when the Dodgers were here in San Francisco when Buster Posey and the two Turners at third base, and no one knew who was out and who wasn't, and it could have been a double play that would have ended the game.
Yeah, Posey blew that one.
This was a rare mistake by Buster Posey, but
the catcher needs to know the rules. It's really weird,
and it was
really strange.
But the thing is, collectively, all three of them have multiple MVPs, and you know, there's lots of years of experience in the game, and none of them seem to really know what the right answer was. So,
I mean, the team with the ball needs to know.
No,
especially
if he's
the catcher.
I'm not denying that. That was a very strange thing, and fortunately for the Giants,
it worked
out in their favor.
It's weird that Turner stepped off the bag, though. That was really strange. Turner stepped off the bag. It seemed like he called timeout, but I don't think he did. The play was still going.
I don't think he did. The play was definitely still
going. The weirdest thing is that Posey didn't immediately tag him. He went the other way.
Well, he thought that he had already tagged.
He was trying to get the trail runner, which everybody knows when there's two men at one base, the lead runner gets the base. I mean, that's like, I think kids know that rule.
Yeah, well, that's the, something you learn in baseball. So in that situation, Trey Turner really was already out and didn't need to be tagged. And the other Turner,
Justin Turner,
Justin Turner, thank you, the redheaded Turner, stepped off the bag. If Posey would have tagged him at that point, then the game was over, and the game went on for I think another inning after that. But neither here nor there. How many mistakes you make, the way that the ball bounces sometimes, and just strange plays that
or
go,
the play from Trey Turner to first base, and on an error, the Giants won on the error.
Yeah, right there, twice this year they've won on an error.
That's two games, so the Dodgers end up losing by one or two games.
Because
you can chalk it all up to that. Now you could chalk it up to some other games that they should have beat the Padres or this
and out of 162 games, there's bound to be, many missed opportunities to win a game here or there, but it also there's that old adage, every year in baseball you lose 60 games, you win 60 games is what you do with the other 42 that really make the difference. Both these teams are having a hell of a year, and it's been a lot of fun. Either way you cut it, no matter how it turns out, it's going to be a fun year.
Yeah, it's tough. Giants don't usually, or haven't usually. Is that an earthquake?
No, that is an earthquake. You said there was construction happening in the building.
All right, we might have to wrap this up here. we are...
Everything would be moving differently if this was an earthquake.
All right. Very strange. You might hear some weird, weird rumbling. Anyway, the Giants usually limp into the postseason and then somehow get stronger. Now, this is a year that they're actually coming in full flex. Are you at all concerned about how they're getting into the postseason based on the last few World Series?
No. I mean, in 2010, they won the division, or they got into the playoffs on the last game of the season by beating the Padres, and went on to win the World Series. They didn't really limp into the postseason.
12-14, though.
12-14. In 12, they won the division. That was the last year that the Dodgers didn't.
Right.
And 2014, they won the wild card and went in. It'll be interesting to see. They're going to be this division is going to be determined on game 162, possibly 163, and I think that playing right up to the end at a high level is going to benefit the team going into the series. They're going to be on the roll, on a roll. They're going to be just continuing to take it one game at a time, which is what the mantra of this team has been all year. Was that they're saying that they're treating each game exactly the same way.
That always makes me laugh because I always think of like George Carlin.
Yeah.
Whenever I hear that, like the asinine idioms, like I'm just gonna take this one day at a time.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice. We're all taking it one day at a time. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stuff like that.
Yeah. I get that.
Hey, it seems to be totally working. Fuck me. I don't know. Wow. All right, we're getting blasted out here. This is crazy. On that note, brings us to last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question was, who has the most gold gloves in Major League Baseball history? Did we get any attempted answers? Did anyone get this question?
Who has the most gloves in MLB history? We got Scott C. in Alameda says, Brooks Robinson. Actually, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, no, it's not Brooks Robinson. He won a few for sure, but he definitely does not have the most.
We got Mike in San Francisco says Omar Vizquel.
Omar Vizquel. It is. He was a fantastic shortstop. It was great to watch him for the 2 years that he was here.
Oh, that's right. Toward the end of his, I remember that. I remember seeing him like in 06.
He won a few, but not the most in history.
We got Tony M in Cerritos says probably Ozzie Smith or Brooks Robinson, and then in parentheses or Cal Ripken Jr.
All good guesses. The Wizard. No, he did not. He did not win the most in history, nor did Cal.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. No, I think I know now.
You think you know now?
Yeah, now I know.
All right.
Yeah, I forgot. This is kind of a trick question.
It is a trick question.
Yeah, kind
of. I think I did drop a little bit of hint that this does, in a strange way, have to do with the West.
Okay, it's not Greinke.
No.
But it is a pitcher.
Yes, it is.
Greg Maddux.
Greg Maddux.
Yeah.
Indeed, with 18 gold gloves. Most in Major League Baseball history.
That's right. Okay. Well, so no winners this time. But you know, it's pretty funny because I think the number two on all time is Jim Capp, another pitcher. So it's kind of like a sneaky trivia question.
It is. Well, that's why I liked it, I think.
Yeah, Maddux was 18, Jim Catt was 16, Brooks Robinson was 16 also. So actually, Brooks Robinson is a close second there. So that's not a bad guess.
No, it wasn't a bad guess at all. Brooks Robinson was a great
16
player.
Gold gloves. And then we got Pudge with 13, Pudge Rodriguez, and then Ozzie Smith with 13 as well. Clemente with 12.
Mm.
And then tied with 11, Willie Mays, Omar Vizquel, and Keith Hernandez. Yeah.
Keith Hernandez.
Yeah, which, by the way, did you watch the new 30 for 30?
I did not. No.
Night in Queens or whatever, what's it called? One Night in Queens or One Year in Queens?
I haven't seen it.
The Mets. The Mets. About the 86 Mets.
About the 86
great.
Mets. No, really good. I would like to watch. I remember that team.
Really?
That was,
yeah, it's on ESPN.
I remember the game, the Infinite Buckner game.
Oh, well, of course. But it's the games that led up to that that are.
It was a great team. I remember that year. I do.
That's a crazy watch, it, man, because there's so much stuff that went on back then that, like, now is.
Taboo.
Yeah. I mean, and not just smoking cigarettes in between innings, like scuffing balls and everybody knows it kind of thing.
That was rampant in Houston as well that year.
Well, exactly. That's the whole thing. You know, when Nolan Ryan
Mike
is
Scott,
on your team.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Scott. When Nolan Ryan's on your team and he's not the best pitcher, so there's something else going on. Pretty good doc, especially now going into the postseason. You know, every club needs a guy like Keith Hernandez, a guy who's sort of, you know, like a military colonel. You know, he's not quite a general because he's like still on the field with everybody, you know.
Right.
But really important stuff. I'm hoping that the kids are watching this. The guys playing the game today.
Yeah.
And seeing what it used to be like and seeing what, you know, the benefits that they have now to improve their game. But
maybe Machado did.
Machado, I got to say I was a bit impressed with Machado. He seemed a little bit mature on that little
outbursts in the,
against
Tatis. The optics weren't great, but the message message was solid.
I gotta say, I was like, wow, well done, Machado. Wow, congrats. Yeah. You're a mature individual now.
Yeah, the first time I watched that, I didn't hear the audio. I wasn't really sure what was said, but it just looked bad. It's like, uh-oh, that's the end of the Padres. And then I watched John Boy's breakdown of the whole thing, and it's like, okay. Well, I think that bodes well for the Padres going forward, as long as they can, you know, hold some sort of consistency with their coaching.
Yeah, and we all know Machado was like the least mature player for pretty much he's throwing bats at third base. I mean, the guy's out of his mind.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it takes, like if you're like
a
dick, sometimes you see another dick and you're like, oh yeah, that's me. Oh, yeah, that sucks. Yeah. And then it makes you change, and that's kind of good. Or, you know, if you work a high-stress job, and then you're working with somebody else, and they're even more stressed, and then you realize, oh, okay, yeah, all right, you know. So anyway, I don't know. I thought that was pretty good for Machado. Yeah, I think you're right. It bodes well for the future. Yeah.
You know, not this year.
Padres. Pretty funny. On that note, from San Francisco, California.
Do we want to do another trivia question?
Oh my God.
We got sidetracked a little
bit.
Sorry about that. But I do have a question for this week.
What do you got for me this week?
All right. So a little bit different direction here. So there's only been a handful of players to hit 50 or more home runs in multiple seasons, and even less for multiple teams. In fact, there are three. The question is, who was the first player to hit 50 or more home runs for two different teams?
Who was the first MLB player to hit 50 home runs for two different teams? Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. You can leave the answer on the Podomatic website. Perhaps iTunes? I don't know. I think you can still comment on there. Probably not, though. Maybe. Yeah, let us know. Two teams, 50 home runs, first guy to do it. Yeah, that's short and sweet. That's pretty easy. I like that one. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.